This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM. This is Soul to Soul on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh. Parshas Yisroi Tov Shin Pei Evov. And a very, very warm welcome to our entire radio family at our new sort of time slot, even closer to the beginning of Shabbos Kodesh. And what a warm, warm welcome. What a wonderful opportunity is to have all of you with us. Bez Hashem, to share some Torah, to grow, to prepare ourselves for the Heilig Shabbos, Habo'oleinu L'Tov, which is coming on us, mamish, any moment. Thank you for taking this time just before Shabbos and joining us. As always, the program today is brought to you as a Refu Shlema for many Chayim. Now, I need to say that the list I get from outside, and I need to know if there's names that I'm saying that Baruch Hashem have had a Refu Shlema and no longer need to be on the list, please let me know. It'll be my greatest joy to be able to remove someone who Baruch Hashem is healthy, and maybe a little bit of Torah helped a little bit for anyone. It would be a zchus to tell me so I know that we can no longer have to mention their name. So I'm going to mention, though, Zalman Yitzchak ben Feiga Rivka. I'm going to mention Yosef Yitzchak ben Bela, Yitzchak Zev Halevi ben Zelda. I'm going to mention Avram Yankov ben Sterna Sarah. And I'm going to mention Esti bas Shoshana Feiga Rezel Pesa Menucha bas Chana Golda, Devora Simcha bas Rezel, and Asna bas Chaya Etta b'Soich Shor Chole Yisrael. May all those who on any level need a refua, need a Yeshua, need a Nechama, need a special input from the Rabbeinu Shlomo, may we all be Zeiche to receive that caress, to receive that kiss from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yishakeinu min Yishikais Piyu, a direct kiss from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, showing and showering us with His love and His devotion. So we have this week the Parsha of Matan Torah, but before that, the Parsha of Yisrei, Vayichad Yisrei. Yisrei rejoiced over all the good things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had done for Yisrei. Yisrael said, Baruch Hashem asher hitzil eschem miyad Mitzrayim umyad Paro. Blessed is Hashem who rescued you from the hand of Egypt. Rashi translates Vayichad Yisrael as Vayismach Yisrael, as rejoiced over the salvation of Am Yisrael. The Brisker Rav, cited by Rav Elyo Baruch Finkel, explains Yisrael's Baracha as a blessing of, like Hagoyno, gratitude to Hashem. Now, we would normally think that the person who recites the Baracha of Hagoyno is none other than the direct beneficiary of Hashem's favor. The Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Chaim 2:19, however, rules that one can fulfill his obligation to bless through the medium of his fellow's blessings, through a shliach. This means that Reuven can bench Goimel for Shimon, and Shimon will have properly discharged his obligation to bless. The Ramah adds that this applies even if the person who recites the bracha had not himself been obligated to say the bracha, since he is basically offering his gratitude to Hashem over his friend's salvation. His bracha fulfills the obligation. The Taz adds that this applies under such circumstances in which the fellow actually rejoices over his friend's salvation. If, however, no sort of relationship exists between them and he recites the bracha sort of cold as just a friendly gesture, it does not discharge his friend's obligation. Another bracha would have to be recited by the actual person who received the nace. right? So we see that the words Vayichad and Yisrael rejoiced is very, very apropos. He truly, truly felt joyous that the Jewish people were spared from Paro. As such, his bracha was totally appropriate. Rav Elia Baruch notes that the word Vayichad can also come from the root Chad, one. Yisrael felt a oneness with Klal Yisrael, and therefore his joy was absolutely genuine, sincere, and reflective of his closeness, of his kinship to the Jewish people. He was with them in their agony and sorrow, and likewise shared their joy and elation. Thus, he had every right to recite the bracha of Hagoyimah. This is 101.9 Chai FM, the program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with much, much more.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos, Kodesh Parshas, Yisroi, Tov Shin Pei Vav, as we stand so close to Shabbos Kodesh. Let's talk a little bit about our Parsha, the Parsha of Matan Torah. And the Gemara says, Shabbos, on Daf Peches 88b, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, B'shah she'olah Moshe l'amor, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shemayim, so the angels said before HaKadosh Baruch, before God, Ribbono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, what is this human being doing amongst us? So Hashem answered, he's come to accept the Torah. So the angel said to Hashem, what? This special, special treasure that you have hidden away for 974 generations before you even created the world, you're going to give it to a human being? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, give them an answer. Moshe Rabbeinu was responding, Ribbono shel Olam, Master, I'm afraid. Maybe they're going to burn me with the kedusha of their mouth. Amalah Hashem said to Moshe, don't worry. Hold on to my kisya cover, to my holy throne, and then give them an answer. So Moshe Rabbeinu answered, Ribbono shel Olam. He spoke to Hashem and he said, the Torah that you're giving me, what's written in it? I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Eretz Mitzrayim. So he turned to the Malachim and he said, did you go down to Egypt? Right? Is there jealousy amongst you? Do you have an evil inclination? And eventually they agreed with him and they allowed him to take the Torah. And of course you have to understand, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to Moshe, hold on to my kisya cover, to my holy throne of glory, and give them an answer? So perhaps we can explain it by giving a foreword of saying something over from the Rambam Mipano in his sefer Asara Mamores, which is actually a Chelik Gimel in the Maimor of Chikur Hadin. So he says, he brings that he wants to explain the words of the Gemara. The Gemara says in Masechet Chagiga on page 13b, that it says there's a river of fire that comes out from the holy throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it sort of emanates through the zeah, through the sweat almost, of the chayas. Chayas are a very, very high level of angel. And it's poured on the heads of evil people in Gehenna, in purgatory. And he quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyahu chapter 23. He said, in a saras Hashem chema, the storm of Hashem, his anger, comes out, and that storm falls on the heads of the wicked people. And Rami Pano explains, these malachim that are called chayas, hakodesh, the holy, holy chayas, So they are the ones that actually carry the Kisya covers, the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's glory, and on which, if such a thing could be said, the Shekhinah sits on that throne. Now, in spite of the fact that these holy chayas carry the Kisya covers, however, the truth is, of course, that it's in actuality the Kisya covered actually carries them. However, says that only works when the Jewish nation down here is serving Hashem properly and the way we should. And we do, and we're providing all sorts of nachas ruach, all kinds of pleasure to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And through that, then the Holy Throne is able to carry those who are trying to carry it. Right? To the point where even the Yischayas HaKadosh, they don't have to work hard at all in carrying Hashem's Holy Throne. But when the Jewish nation is not serving Hashem properly, and Chas V'Shalom, there are amongst us evil people, then the Kisya covered no longer is able to carry the angels that are trying to carry it. But on the contrary, it becomes very, very heavy, and these poor Chayas HaKadosh have to work very, very hard and toil very much to be able to carry the Kisya covered of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And because of this very, very hard work, whatever that means, they sweat until from that sweat comes this, what we call the Nahar Dinor, this fiery river, which is a river that, since this sweat is created by the actions of the Rishoyim down here on this earth, which causes their sins, cause the Kisya cover to become heavy and to make the carrying of the chair so difficult. Therefore, tit for tat, mida keneged mida, that sweat is poured on the heads of the Rishoyim in Gehenna. Comes out, therefore, that when a person does an Avera, he causes such a thing to say, if he could say such a thing, that Hashem's holy throne is no longer able to carry the Malachim. And those chayas that are carrying the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to sweat, and they have to work hard in carrying it. And that's what, in fact, Adam HaRishon, the first man, caused with his sin. And therefore he was punished. With the sweat of your brow, you're going to eat food. Mida keneged mida, again, tit for tat, because he caused that the chayas had to work hard. Based on this, we can give another reason for what the Taz says in Orach Chaim, Siman 460, that it says regarding the concept of baking matzahs. Says B'sefer Kavanos, the Arizal says that a person should make a big effort in the mitzvah of baking matzahs to the point where he gets hot and he sweats, and will there he will break away all the impurities that came about and Chas V'Shalom and caused terrible destruction. And that's because of a person's sin, he caused these malachim to have to sweat, and therefore, as an atonement, he needs to sweat. So now we can say that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, hold on to my holy throne, he was teaching him that the malachim that hold the holy throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu need Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because when Moshe Rabbeinu, in the role as a leader, teaches Bnei Yisrael, inspires Bnei Yisrael, so that a Jew will learn Torah, so then what he's actually doing is, he is holding up the Kisya covered, that it shouldn't become too heavy for the angels to have to carry. Whereas we are supporting the kise HaKavod from needing to be carried by the malachim, so that the malachim don't have to work hard to bring it. Rav Chaim Pelagi in his Sefer Moyed L'Chol Chai brings that the month of Shvat is really Rosh Teves of Shalom, peace, bracha, blessing, toiva, and goodness. And he says, Shvat is an aspect of the one of the Midos Hashem of Hod, and which is the attribute of Aaron HaKohen. And in this month, we have to make a big, big effort to be people that love peace and chase after peace and try to make peace between man and his fellow man, between husband and wife, even more than any other months of the year. And once this hint comes that we have Shalom and Bracha and Toiva in this month, which is the month of Shvat, and be very, very careful also to honor people who learn Torah and to sort of support people who are weak, and don't chas v'shalom speak lashon hara, evil speech, and don't run to do bad things in this month. And the Aramaic says that the name of the month, which is Shvat, right, is the same gematria as Raphael, because we have the ability to heal things. And therefore, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was being told. We hold up the kiseh. Our mitzvahs, when we do what we're supposed to do, when we observe the Torah, we make it easy for the malachim. And that benefits, of course, us, but it benefits the whole world, because it even prevents the Rishoyim from having to accept terrible, terrible punishments. It's 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with much, much more.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh. Parshas Yisroi Tov Shin Pei Vav, and a warm welcome to anyone who's joining us now as we approach ever so close to another beautiful Shabbos Kodesh, Habo Leinu Tova. What a privilege, what a schus to be together with all of you and to share a little bit of Torah before we go into Shabbos. So we know there's actually an argument brought by the Midrashim. Did Moshe Rabbeinu, when he went back to Egypt, and due to his conversation with Aaron, he actually sent his wife and children back to her father in Midian. Did he actually divorce Zipporah, his wife, and give her a divorce document? Or did he just sort of send her back to her father's house, but they actually still remained husband and wife? The Mechilta brings it on the one of the first psukim in this week's Pasha, where it says, Vayikach Yisroi Chois and Moshe. Yisroi took with, Yisroi, the father-in-law of Moshe, took with Es Tzipora Ishis Moshe, Tzipora, the wife of Moshe, Achar Shilucheha, literally translated, after he had sent her away. So the Medrash brings two opinions. Rabbi Yeshua says, what does it mean that he sent away? He actually gave her a get. He gave her a divorce document. Why? Because it says here the word shilucher, the word sending away. And later on, by the parsha, where the Torah describes the way a get works, it uses the word v'chosav lo sefer kerisus v'shilcha. He sent away, uses the same word. And just like over there, we're talking about giving a get, giving a divorce document. Here too, that's actually what happens. Rabbi Eliezer argues on Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer Amadoi. He says, no, it means after they separated from each other, right? And through a process called Mamar, where basically he says to her, with just as a statement, go home, to your father, but there was no formal divorce proceedings that took place. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, right, go bring my people, the Bnei Yisrael, out of Egypt, as it says, Lech go veshlachachai el Paro, I'm going to send you to Paro. At that time, Moshe took his wife and his two sons, and he was going to take them with him to Mitzrayim. As it says, Vayikach Moshe et ishto ve'et banav. Moshe took his wife and children, Vayakiveim al hachamor, and he put them on a donkey, and they were on the way back to Mitzrayim. At that time, right, God told Moshe's brother Aaron, go to meet Moshe. So Yotze, he went out to meet Moshe, and they kissed and hugged, and he said to him, Moshe, where were you all these years? Amaloi, Moshe said, Bin Midian. I was in the country of Midian. So he said to him, who's this? Who's this wife and these children that are with you? Amaloi, Moshe said, Ishti Ubana. This is my wife and my children. And Ula Anama Talicham, where are you bringing them? I'll bring them with me to Mitzrayim. So Aaron said to him, what? We don't have enough problems dealing with those who are already there. And now you're going to bring more people to Mitzrayim? At that time, he said to Tzipporah, go back to your father's house. And at that time, she went back to her father's house. And she took her two sons with her. And that's why it says, Achash Shiluchea Veshnevanea. After he had sent her away and the two children. Comes out that there's this fundamental argument. Did Moshe Rabbeinu actually divorce his wife or not? Now, the Chidah in his Sefer Nachal Kedumim explains that this whole argument is actually dependent and connected to another argument, which is the Gemara that's brought in the Masechet Zvachim on page 102. Did Moshe Rabbeinu have the status of being a Kohen? Of being a what we call a Kohen, a priest. And it says it's a machloket between two sages, two Tanoim, if Moshe Rabbeinu in fact was a Kohen or not. Because in the whole negotiation that took place between Hashem and Moshe Rabbeinu at the snare, so and Moshe kept refusing to go. And Hashem was trying to convince him. And after 7 days, Moshe said, send someone else. So the Pasuk says, Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe. Hashem got angry at Moshe. And the Medrash came, and the Gemara came to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, and Rabbi Yeshua the son of Korcha said, anytime we find that God got angry anywhere in the Torah, so there's a serious consequence of that anger, right? That we see sometimes that God got angry, right? Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu would hit someone. Sometimes he would reject someone. Sometimes there'll be a curse, but here, it doesn't say seemingly that there was any sort of consequence of Hashem getting angry to Moshe. However, Rabbi Shimon Yochai says, no, it's not true. There was a serious consequence even here, because God's response, Hashem's response to Moshe's sort of excuse was, oh, haloi aroin achicha halevi. What about your brother Aaron? The Levi, because he really was going to be the Levi, right? Yodati ki daber yedaberu. I know that he's prepared to speak. And from that, the Major says, from that Aaron merited to become the Kohen. Their roles were swapped. Moshe was supposed to have been the Kohen and Aaron the Levi, and because of Moshe's constant and consistent refusal, the roles were swapped and Aaron became the Kohen and Moshe became the Levi. Right? This is what it's saying. Ani Amarti says that Hashem said, you are going to be the Kohen and Aaron's going to be the Levi. Now we're reversing it. Aaron's going to be the Kohen and you're going to be the Levi. And some say that even this transition didn't take place right away. It only began from the next generation, that the children of Moshe lost the right to be Kohenim. But Moshe Rabbein himself remained, his whole life remained a Kohen. Now, let's work it out. So according to Rav and Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kohen, so if so, it's not possible to say that Moshe Rabbeinu divorced his wife Tzipora. Because, in fact, if he had actually divorced her, how would he be allowed to remarry her? A Kohen's not allowed to marry a divorcee. And therefore, we have to say that if, in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kohen, it must be true that he did not actually divorce her, but he sent her away and told her to go home. Therefore, we understand that the actual argument between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elazar HaModoi, if Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kohen, and Rabbi Yeshua holds that he divorced her with a get, so he must hold, like Rabbi Shimon, that Moshe Rabbeinu was no longer a Kohen. Because if he was no longer a Kohen, then he could divorce her and remarry her. And therefore we have to say that, in fact, he divorced her, and then, because of the fact that he lost the kuna, he was now able to remarry her once the kuna was taken away from him. But according to Rabbi Elazar HaModoi, he must hold, who says that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kohen, therefore he must agree with the one that says that he actually divorced her, because it's not possible, if he had divorced her, that he was going to be able to remarry her. Therefore, he must hold that Moshe Rabbeinu actually sent her away, not with a divorce, but just with a separation of sorts. Now, the Chidah brings there, quoting from Rabbi Yaakov, the Av Beis Din of Lublin, the father of the Gaon Rav Heschel, to explain why by Moshe Rabbeinu does it say, that God, Vayishma Yisro Koyen Midyan, Yisro the father-in-law of Midyan, the Chosin Moshe, the father-in-law of Moshe, heard, Eis kol asher aso Elokim l'Moshe. Everything that Elokim had done for Moshe. And then regarding the Jewish nation, it says, Ki otzi Hashem, Yudke Vovke, et Yisrael Mitzrayim. He had taken Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. And why by Moshe Rabbeinu does it use the word Elohim, which generally denotes the element of Hashem's strict justice, and by Bnei Yisrael it uses the name of Yudkei Vavkei, which generally denotes mercy and compassion. And based on what we're saying, it actually makes sense, because by the burning bush, the Midat HaDin, the strict attribute of justice, made a huge, huge consequence for Moshe Rabbeinu, that the kahuna was taken away from Moshe and given to Aaron, right? As it says, Vayara Hashem, when Hashem saw Kisar Lerot, that he had turned aside to see what was going on, Vayikre Elav Elokim, Hashem called him. And therefore, from the very beginning, Yisrael, right, didn't want to come back to Moshe because he divorced Zipporah's wife, and a Kohen is not allowed to marry a divorcee. But by Yishma Yisrael es kol asher asa Elokim, when Yisrael heard this strict justice that had been meted out to Moshe Rabbeinu, i.e., that Moshe Rabbeinu, because Hashem got angry at him, punished him, and the kuna was taken away from him, therefore Yisrael felt more confident and was able to bring Tzipora back, because now that Moshe Rabbeinu was no longer a Kohen, he would now be able to remarry his wife, Tzipora, because she had, since he was no longer the acting Kohen. Perhaps you can even add more to what he says, because there's the Gemara in Saita on page Yud Gimel, which says and expounds the pasuk in last week's parsha, where it says, "Vayikach Moshe atzmos Yosef imoy." Moshe Rabbeinu, when they went out of Mitzrayim, took with him the remains, the bones of Yosef. And the Gemara says, "Tana Rabban, our rabbis learnt, Boyurei, come and see kama chavivos mitzvos al Moshe Rabbeinu. How precious the fulfillment of all mitzvos was to Moshe Rabbeinu. Shekol Yisrael kula nisasku bebiza. Everybody else, as they were on the days leading up to the exodus from Egypt, were busy visiting all the Egyptians and sort of taking away all their wealth. And Moshe Rabbeinu was busy with mitzvos. As it says, Chacham lev yikach mitzvos. A wise man grabs mitzvos. End quote from the Gemara. And the obvious question is, if Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kohen, so how could he allow himself to become ritually defiled for the remains of Yosef? So therefore it must be that in fact he was no longer a Kohen, and therefore he was allowed to be busy with the bones of Yosef. And that's why it says, by Yisroi, by Yishma, Yisroi, Yisroi, what did he hear? Mashmu, Hashem, Abba. What motivated Yisroi to come? Number one, Kriyas Yamsuf. Number one, the tearing of the Reed Sea. And Umelchemet Amalek. And the war against Amalek. And we can say that he heard also that Kriyas Yamsuf, as we know, one of the influential pieces that caused the sea to want to split was the bier, the coffin of Yosef. And who was carrying, who was looking after the coffin of Yosef? Moshe Rabbeinu. Therefore, it must be, Yeshua reasons, that he's not a Kohen. And therefore, he was able to he felt entitled to bring back Tzipora, his divorcee, and therefore Yisro came with the whole family. Comes out therefore that when all of the Jewish nation was busy getting wealth from the Egyptians, Moshe Rabbeinu, right, he wasn't involved in that, and he was busy finding the coffin of Yosef. And would seem, therefore, that Moshe Rabbeinu lost out. He didn't get any of the wealth, right? Because the Gemara says that every single Jew, there wasn't a single Jew that didn't have tishim chamoyim, that didn't have with him at least 90 different donkeys, right? Who was carrying mikaspo zava shalom, carrying the gold and silver of all the Egyptians, says Gemara in Becholot. However, right, at the end it became clear that because of the coffin of Yosef, that actually was the causality that Tzipora was able to come back and remarry Moshe Rabbeinu, because that sort of made apparent to her father Yisroi that Moshe Rabbeinu was not actually any longer a Kohen, and therefore he was able to bring back his wife to remarry Moshe Rabbeinu. It's also just quite interesting to point out there's another Medrash, there's a Yalkut Shimoni, where the Medrash says on this week's Pasha, actually paragraph number 271, it says, you know, we wonder about the fact that obviously the main topic of this week's Torah reading is, of course, the giving of the Torah. But the truth is that almost equal space, it's not a very long Torah reading, almost equal space is given to this whole saga of Yitro coming
And then, and as we see after the in the second and third Aliyah, how Yitro gives advice to Moshe Rabbeinu, which probably today wouldn't be such a great thing to do anyway, to start giving your son-in-law advice. Some of them will take it well. Some might not. How to run things? How to run the judging? And then we go straight to the build-up, and then the actual performance of Matan Torah and the whole great, incredible sort of sight and sound show that happened there. And in fact, there's even a discussion whether Yitro was actually present at Matan Torah. Did he arrive before that, or did he only come afterwards? It seems that it may have been afterwards, because if Yitro was making contributions and suggestions about how Moshe Rabbeinu should judge the people, so it would seem that could only have happened when there was a Torah, when there was already an active Torah, and there were disputes and there were ways of resolving that using the laws of the Torah. But there's a definite connection between Yitro and the Matan Torah, because we know that Yitro, who was the Kohen Midian, actually gave up everything. He was in a position of, he was chief priest of the entire Midianite country. And, probably came with all the perks and the fancy car and the summer villa on the Rhine. And he gave that all up because he saw that it wasn't real. It wasn't genuine. It didn't make sense. And he investigated all the religions, and he came to Yiddishkeit. He came with a firm belief that Moshe Emes v'Torah Emes, that there was nothing true in the world except for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his Torah. And of course, we who receive the Torah and our merit not only to keep the Torah, but every year we read again about this whole reenactment of the acceptance of the Torah. And the same thing on some level needs to be our mission. We have so many other things going on in our lives, so many other things in our heads, so much rubbish that's going around us. We also need to a certain level to throw all that away, to sort of dispose of that and commit ourselves to this concept of Moshe Emet V'Torah Tov, that the only truth, the only real enduring reality of this world is, of course, the Torah of Hashem. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul, back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kedish. Parashas Yisroi Tov Shin Pei Vav. As we prepare for another amazing, amazing Shabbos, Baruch Hashem, we're getting close on our new time slot. We're really, really close to the beginning of Shabbos, and that is really, really amazing for us. So let's do as we always do at this point. Let us look at the important times we need to know for this coming Shabbos. Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Yisro. It's so wonderful that Baruch Hashem, We don't always appreciate the fact that, we have every week, every Shabbos, after 6 days of hard work, and it's been a tough slog, and then Shabbos comes. Shabbos gives us this really opportunity to kind of come back to ourselves, really come back to think about and focus on what life is really about, and how we can sort of really utilize the opportunities that Shabbos gives us. So let's talk about Shabbos. So as far as the earliest time to light Shabbos candles, it's coming up right very soon. 5:34 is already the earliest time, very soon, that you can light your Shabbos candles, right? 5:34 is already, we can take on Shabbos, and it's a wonderful thing if you can to sort of get back into Shabbos mode. It's, as I say, it's been a tough week. Let's find a way of if he can, of grabbing a bit of extra Shabbos. Try to begin as early as possible, if you can, even at that time. If you can't manage by then, so then the latest time for benching Lichdei Shabbos is at 6:39 is the absolute latest time, although, of course, many communities are still accepting Shabbos at the standard summer time for Johannesburg, which is at 6:15, in which case, of course, if you're part of a community that does that, then you're bound to light your Shabbos candles by then. Otherwise, it's 6:39. And yes, that is the latest possible time for lighting candles, although there is another 18 minutes until sunset. That, of course, is emergency time only for really, really desperate situations. As far as we are concerned, the final lighting, candle lighting time is 6:39, is our absolute deadline in terms of what we're allowed to do, when we're allowed to do any non-Shabbistic activities. Shkia then is at 6:57, 3 minutes before 7 is Shkia, and therefore, if you want to make sure that you are saying Krishma tonight at the right time, after it is proper night, all you have to do is wait until 7:15. 7:15 is proper night, and then you can, if you said it too early in Shul, you can then say Krishma and sit down with the family to another amazing, amazing Leil Shabbos dinner. Tomorrow, of course, is Parshas Yisroi, a parsha perhaps short in quantity, but packed full of quality, all about Matan Torah, of course, preceded by the whole incident of Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law, arriving with Moshe's family and sort of integrating into the Jewish nation to the point where he feels comfortable to even give advice. And then, of course, the introduction and the bringing of the whole build-up to Matan Torah and the actual ceremony itself. Mind-boggling. And of course, the Haftarah, which comes from Yeshaya, talks about the fact that Yeshaya also had this tremendous opportunity, like the Jews had, to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu up close and personal. Beautiful, beautiful Haftarah. And of course, Shabbos, yes, Shabbos is getting a bit shorter already, but it's still a nice long day. Shabbos Kodesh ends tomorrow night at 7:29. So it's already still plenty of time to have a really good day, to spend some time having a good shlof and some family time, maybe take a shlobutzia, take a bit of a walk, and yet to devote serious time to some Limud HaTorah, which of course is the priority on Shabbos for us to actually open our hearts, open our minds to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. Let it fill us. Let it sort of shape our minds. Let it sort of formulate the way we think and the way we deal with situations. Of course, next week already we are going to be having Shabbos Avorchim already for Chodesh Elul. So Purim is not far away. Time certainly to start thinking about, if not actually preparing yet, for Purim. We are talking about electricity and appliances on Shabbos. And I want to carry on. We had a discussion about the way we can deal with certain problems of things that need to be done on Shabbos by creating a groma situation where we create a indirect causality that sort of makes things happen. For example, and worldwide there are actually organizations that specialize in halacha and technology and devoting themselves to kind of engineering these kind of electrical appliances to turn on, that they turn on using groma, this indirect causality, so that they may be used in cases of need. Right? This is not to be used on a regular basis in your home, etc., but are only allowed in situations of great need.
One such method, the different methods of how it works. One such method is called what's called Hasaras Hamanea, removing an impediment, which means, and we'll see in a second. A second method uses a kind of a type of a scanner that performs a scan every few seconds and turns an appliance on if it determines that a switch has been flipped. So therefore, flipping the switch does not actually turn on the appliance, but only causes it to be turned on sort of indirectly. A third method is based on the principle that one may extend the present state. The appliance is kind of set to turn on for 1 second every few seconds. When the switch is flipped, so then the next time the appliance turns on, it will not turn off after a second, but will actually remain activated. Now, others maintain that one may not use any of these sort of clever kind of stratagems. Right? If an appliance is set to be activated electronically, causing its activation is not considered grama, actually, but in fact the normal way of activating it. So there are machmirim in this area also. Now, in practice, it would seem that if one's action causes an appliance to turn on within a short time, right, like it would be sort of turned on during the week, then even if the appliance has been sort of programmed to turn on in a sort of grama type way, one may not turn it on. Right? The internal workings of the machine are not really important. If it turns on in a way that looks normal, right, then that's not considered a grama at all. Therefore, sort of lifts and automatic doors may not be turned on via grama, since the goal is for them to sort of function in their normal way, right, soon after being turned on. Right? It would not be considered a grama in that case. So, similarly, one may not sort of travel using what they call it, one of these electrical wheelchairs, right, or a golf cart, right, specially designed for use by the sick or disabled and elderly on Shabbos, since it operates in the way that one would operate a similar device during the week. And of course, that is too close for God. We're going to come back with some closing words in a moment. In the meantime, let's take a short break. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul, and this is the greatest radio station in all of Africa.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parashas Yisrael, Tov Shin Pei Evav. Wow, what is supposed to be? We're so cool. We can touch Shabbos almost. It's so close. And I'm so grateful that all of you have stayed with us, that you're part of the show. It is really, really amazing. As we sort of wrap up for this week, just we're finishing a discussion on the concept of using a technology to create situations where when you turn on a machine or turn on something, it doesn't happen directly, but it's sort of there's a causality that causes at some point to go on. Now, obviously, when we talk about such things, obviously in a situation where it's necessary, in it's often used by hospitals and things, where obviously there's things they have to do, but even things that they have to do, if you can somehow downgrade it to a lesser degree of malacha on Shabbos, of course, in a way where it's the most expedient way of doing things and is not in any way compromising, God forbid, the care of the patients, then for sure in those situations we should use it. But in our own home and never in regular situations, we really should not rely on that and not do anything that looks at all, as we said before, similar to the way that we would do things on a normal weekday. That's sort of in contrast when sort of one's action causes an appliance to turn on only with a significant sort of delay. So then, if it is brought about sort of indirectly, whether by sort of hasara samanea, right, removing something that's blocking it from going, or a scan, or extending the present state. So in all these cases, that is considered groma, and such a system may be used when needed. And this, of course, is a practice regarding arming a kind of a security system. If turning a key will cause the system to work via groma, and it will only actually arm itself sort of 10 minutes after the key is turned, so then it's considered a groma. And in certain situations where there's great need, one may use things like that. It's not to be considered a blanket allowance for anything. And obviously, in any situation, one would need to consult one's rav and find out what the reality is. This actually concludes our discussion of electricity. Bez Hashem, from next week, we're going to go back to discussing some of the melachos. We're going to start with the melacha of writing and erasing next week, which will be part of our Hilchos Shabbos slot. But in the meantime, it's time for us to sort of run off and get our Shabbos ready. So I want to wish you all just thank you so, so much for joining us. Thank you for being part of our radio family this week. And to each and every one of you, a beautiful, beautiful good Shabbos and a Shabbat Shalom to one and to all.